It's a very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. Lots to get through. By the way, has anybody seen... Now, I don't know how true this is. Maybe they're old pictures. But there are videos and pictures gone viral of the Pride Parade in Berlin this week. And there's a bunch of lads. When I say lads, these are middle-aged men, you know, in the 40s to 60s, walking around in the nip in the parade. Now, they're painted in rainbow colours, so I'm assuming they're gay. But they're walking around in their nip. And it's billed as a family event. And there's children along the sides waving little pride flags. These lads, I mean, their langers are hanging out. I mean, they're in the nude. It's like the emperor's new clothes. Everybody's afraid to say something. It doesn't matter whether you're gay, whether you're straight, whether you're trans, whether you're bi, whatever. You don't walk around in the nude in a parade in the middle of a city without being arrested. It's indecent exposure. It's perverted. You're sick. There's something wrong with you. I mean, what is going on that people won't call this out? I mean, and they're waving their flags and their doodads are hanging and swinging. And I'm going, why is that even allowed? Just under the guise that it's pride and that's great. Look, have your pride parade. I'm delighted for you. But this kind of narrow-minded nonsense. I mean, I spoke to people during the week who are going to the Pride Parade, who are gay, and they said they'd be mortified to see something like that. That's the very reason they sometimes don't want to go to these parades. Anyway, if that happens in Dublin, I would like to see the individuals arrested, by the way. I hope it doesn't happen in Dublin. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about today was the Irish Times journalist Kitty Holland has said, so it must be true, unless you care, Kitty's a lefty, that many NGO staff working with asylum seekers in Ireland are well aware that there are significant numbers of economic migrants deliberately posing as asylum seekers in order to come to Ireland. During an interview on an episode of In the News podcast, Kitty Holland said that NGO workers were aware that significant numbers of asylum applicants in Ireland were indeed posing as such because they see it as the only legal way to enter the country. Speaking of the show, she said, you will hear a lot of the NGO people who are working with particularly the homeless asylum seekers in the tents and that kind of thing. So just saying that, you know, yes, a lot of people who are coming in here to apply for asylum because that's the only legal route they actually have to get into the country, and they will admit it themselves. They're only here to make a better life. And speaking of whether concessions should be made in terms of allowing broader applications for the permits, Kitty Holland said, so there have been calls to look at an opening for other legal routes into the country because, you know, frankly, we do need the workers, you know, so wouldn't it be great if people didn't have to go through the hell of applying for asylum and all this stress and strain and probably possibly failing in their asylum application and being deported. So what Kitty Holland is essentially saying is that people should be able to come to Ireland as economic migrants, and there should be a legal pathway to do that rather than apply for asylum. In other words, you arrive at Dublin Airport, you've no visa, you've no green card, you've no permit to work, and you just arrive and you go, yeah, I want to work. Yeah, let me in. Thanks very much. There should be a legal process for you to do that, from no matter where you happen to be coming from in the world. Now, there is an argument that we're short on workers. There is an argument that you're always going to have economic migration into different countries around the world. I mean, you see it in America, you see it everywhere. But should we, let's say, for example, if we take what Roderick O'Gorman said, and I believe it's a conservative estimate, and he believes that just over 60% are economic migrants. Leo Varadkar said once that less than 30%, I think, were actually genuine asylum seekers. I believe the figure is actually a lot less than that. I believe the figure is probably closer to 10% are actually proper asylum seekers. And let's be clear about it. Last May, or should I say May just gone, was the record number of people seeking international protection in Ireland. Now, when they say the figure is 3,000 people, for example, in a particular month, you can be guaranteed it's actually double that. Because that's only the number of people who present themselves at the IPAS centre who maybe come to Northern Ireland. There are a lot of people who will come to Ireland as economic migrants and don't present themselves at IPAS. They're sleeping on a mate's couch and working in a local garage in the black economy. And we don't know about it. They're undocumented. The argument, of course, is from the NGOs, is about, sure, look, didn't the Irish do it in America for years? So why are we being so horrible about this to people who are coming here for a better life, fleeing for a better life, primarily middle-aged men? So I want to know, would you accept a new pathway, a legal pathway, for economic migrants to remain in Ireland and not be deported? Let me know what you think. The number is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Let me go, first of all, to Carl Dieter. Carl is a little bit of everything these days, financial advisor, media pundit, you name it, he's it really. Carl, good afternoon to you.
These introductions, man, you're going to have to tame them down.
Yeah, I know. We're just going to have to come up with one particular description of you, Carl, because you have so many hats. I heard you on the news the other day, or News Talk or something, and I don't know what you were, financial something or other there. And, you know, I'm not too sure what to call you anymore.
Four-letter words tend to suit me well.
So, Carl, I mean, is Kitty Holland right? Should we have a new process, you know, rather than just the visa process, rather than applying for asylum, but another legal pathway for economic migrants? Then we might as well just throw away the law.
Yeah, so when people are economic migrants, let's just be aware, there's loads of miserable shitholes in the world. People would have every reason for wanting to leave them and move to a better place. And you know what? If you were born in the same place, you'd probably want to do the same. Like if you grew up in Mauritania or the Democratic Republic of Congo or many of the poorest nations of the world, which overwhelmingly are in Africa. I mean, I think this is something that every kind of continent outside of Africa is going to struggle with, because we either have to get that continent successful or figure out how everyone can assimilate better. But like, I grew up in California and half the population were Mexicans and many jumped the border. And this type of argument was alive there for 50, you know, since forever. So what I'd say is there's a few things. You can't assume that everyone who's an economic migrant by wanting a better financial future is like no skills and they're just coming to sponge off the state and cause trouble. Like some are engineers.
But many are coming to sponge off the state.
Okay, but let's just, you do have to be aware that not everybody can get out of a country and all be no skilled people. Like some are coming with skills. You have to acknowledge that. It's not fair to describe it as otherwise. Now, what I can say is in the USA, that the first generation that arrived, okay, maybe they're not highly skilled, but their children, and in America, they're known as Chicanos, which is a first generation Mexican-American, they go on to be lawyers and doctors and highly productive members of society. So, like, there is an argument for saying that there should be a path. But if the people who I think we should be saying, like, you're coming here to do what? What is your skills? What do you plan on doing? Like, if their idea is that I'm going to go there and work hard, yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, you know, we need people in all sorts of jobs, and it's hard to fill, in particular, low-end jobs at the moment, which the people who come here quite often take up. But if your idea is just that, look, Ireland is really great at giving out loads of money, let's go there instead of somewhere else. And that is actually an issue that we saw in the past in this country, where our kind of welfare supports were out of kilter with other places. That's wrong. Everyone knows that's wrong. I don't really even see this as an argument. Like,
yeah, but when you look at the percentage, like out of 3,000, let's say for argument's sake, roughly 2,000 are economic migrants. Now, we couldn't sustain that type of, yeah, because I understand the point you're making. Their kids will be productive members of society, or could be productive members of society in the future after they get third level education, et cetera, right? But for the next 20 years, those particular individuals will most likely, many of them, will be a burden on the state. We'll have to provide them an accommodation. We'll have to provide them with a welfare payment or a top-up payment of some description, because most likely they're labourers. What I'm saying is, it is costly. And I understand we need an increase in population. I know that. But in saying that, is this really the route? We don't even know who half them are.
Yeah, so look, you could take this idea. I'm not saying that we don't do proper vetting and that's a failure at the moment. And so that's not part of this argument. Not doing vetting isn't a reason to say that you cut out, you know, you just shut the whole place down. That's an argument for actually doing the job right. But what I'd be doing is saying to people, look, if you want to be here and you're an economic migrant, let us know in advance that you plan to come so we can have your application there. And there is a path for an economic migrant. If you just rock up and pull this shit, you're into a quick expulsion.
No, okay.
Process.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the thousands who are currently in accommodation, 30,000 currently in accommodation and in tents along the canal or whatever it happens to
be. Yeah, and the other thing is give them a work visa. Say, show me evidence you have a job. And if you don't in 6 months, you can go back to wherever it was.
What? So give everybody a work visa that arrives here. So then we might as well just take away the staff at the ports and the immigration and just say, listen, there's no need for you there. What's the point?
The staff there will know a few things. A, is the people who will be given the work visas, they may have language barriers, they may have skill barriers, and they're not going to go in and take over the jobs. B, if you know that if they're potentially getting turfed out, if they're not working on the job and succeeding, they might not even be.
But you're starting to sound like a lefty now, Carl. You know, and you were always balanced in your argument in this. I mean, I understand that we have to have a humane approach to things, right? But you can't just hand work visas to everybody who arrives in the country once we establish they're not criminals. You can't just hand them work visas.
You've jumped over the step that I'm talking about. What I'm saying is, at present, our system is broken. So I'm not talking about getting a broken system and breaking it further. What I'm saying is, we should have a path for people who want to come to a country and say, look, in effect, I want to come here for economic reasons. Now, you can call them economic refugees. Put whatever words you want. I just say people who want a better life. And they're not going to get a better life in the Democratic Republic of Congo, so they want to go to Europe. And that's understandable. So have an application process and say that, you know, if you want to come here, prove that you know something about our you know, society, our generally accepted behavior. You know, like, there's people who come over here and they genitally mutilate their kids. I think they should all just instantly take your visa, gone. Anyone who's, like, any of these kinds of things, there's a lot of stuff that I strongly disagree with. But what you do is you say, look, there is a path. And if you qualify and all you've got is a strong back, yeah, there'll be some of you guys coming too. Like, if that's the only thing you have to offer. But you've got to be working. You're not coming over to be part of a system of people who do nothing. We already, you know, we have enough of those homegrown without adding to it from elsewhere. And I think that that's something that has a place. Now, it does not mean just open it up to whatever you want. That's not what it means. So
that's what it sounds like. That's really what it sounds like. We already have a system whereby if you have a particular skill, and even if you don't have a particular skill, we've actually broadened the criteria for getting a work permit in Ireland anyway in the last 6 months.
I've actually applied for some of those visas for people who worked for me in the past. I can tell you right now, like, it might sound like, oh yeah, you're just applying, it's a job. It's not.
What I'm saying is there's a pathway there for people who want to come to Ireland and work, right? And you don't have to be a doctor or a surgeon or anything like that. There is a pathway there.
With most of those, though, you have to be here already and then get a job and then also be proving that you've got a high requirement skill. So it's like they broadened that out.
Roderick O'Gorman broadened that out there about 3 or 4 months ago. They have this new system now. But anyway, that's beside the point. So we've already got a system whereby people can come here legitimately and legally. We've also got another system whereby they can come from a place of war or whatever it is, or the life persecution, whatever it is, called asylum seeking, which 10% of probably those who come here apply or not apply fit that criteria. The rest don't. Mm-hmm. And you're suggesting, you know, we should have another pathway in the middle somewhere for those who are essentially economic migrants, which is everybody else who's coming here. So then, realistically, you're not really saying no to anybody then, are you?
Well, no, I am. What I'm saying is to the people who just rock up and present themselves and say, here I am. For them, I think you should have a 2 week period where you say, look, you're going to spend the next 2 weeks in a hotel. Congratulations. You spent 10 grand getting here. But at the end of this 2 weeks, we're making a call on this and you're going, or you're staying, but.
This new pathway you've talked about. And when you rock up here and in that 2 week period, can you apply for that new pathway?
I would say that you'd have to say no to that. It would have to be, for it to work, something that you apply for. Like, what I'm saying is they would be the ones who would be applying before they arrive. And we say, look, there is a path. If you want to take, you know, the correct path.
But that's how Katie Holland is insinuating.
And say, you know, we'll offer 5,000 of these visas every year, or next year is none, this year is 10,000, whatever. You can manage the number and say that that's what you can apply for.
Will America do that? There are other countries that's called a lottery. They do the lottery every year, yeah. Whereby you don't have to have a particular skill, you just apply and they pick a certain number every year, primarily.
Now you're making my argument for me, which is great. So what I'd say is that to move past that, though, is that for the people who just kind of, you know, wander up and want to break the system, which would be the same as the people who want to break the system at the southern border in the USA, you say, look, there's a very, very, very shortened period of time here, and you might not get to have all of your evidence heard. Because guess what? When you show up this way, you're not doing it in the correct manner. And so we're going to make a very quick call on it. And if we find out that you're not a legitimate case, then you're going
home. Okay. Okay. Well, stay there for a second, Carl. Let me go to Jackie. Jackie, hi. How are you?
I'm good, Niall.
You heard what Carl said. He kind of agrees with Katie Holland, but maybe not exactly the same method, but that there should be another pathway somewhere in the middle for economic migrants.
Well, you know, if you look at the Australian system, and when people come in, then they're put into centres.
They're sent to an island of Australia, yeah, but, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, so everyone is kind of reviewed, or is supposed to be reviewed, and then to see, okay, will we let this person in, or will we deport them? For our system is broken, and I don't think we had a proper system anyway, because no one realized or could have imagined that this was on the cards going back years ago, like that we were going to be going down this road. Now, if you look at the NGOs, because remember, that's what you were talking about, the NGOs, and you were kind of saying, right, so if those people aren't coming in, well, then these NGOs don't have a job. So the more people that are coming in, the more money that they can look for, and the more money that they can pay themselves. So there's a whole thing there that needs to be looked at as exactly what some of these NGOs do.
Okay, but get to the nub of the problem. So out of 3,000 people roughly in a month, let's say, for example, 2,000 of those are economic migrants. That's a fair guess, right? So what do we do with those individuals from Albania and Georgia and wherever else they happen to be from, Nigeria? They're not asylum seekers. They're just falsely claiming asylum. According to Katie Holland, her argument is there should be a pathway there for those economic migrants rather than deporting them.
I'd be deporting them because they're in for the wrong reason. They're not in here to help the country. The two main sectors, the construction and hospitality sector, were looking for people that they didn't have enough staff and this, that, and the other. So suddenly you have all these people coming in that they can pay, you know, the minimum wage and that, and drives out our own people to go elsewhere, to Australia or to America or to wherever, to try and seek a better living. But then go out and they'll work.
And I get you, and I agree with you, but Carl's argument is that, okay, the first generation of these, primarily men, it seems to be, right, may be a burden on the state. They may always have to claim a social welfare payment. They may be looking for accommodation or a HAP scheme or whatever it happens to be in the future, right? But the next generation of those will go to college. They'll get an education. They could turn out to be doctors or lawyers or whatever, you know?
God.
So,
and do you honestly think that the government are looking that far ahead and would even be that, would even be thinking that, like... You know, that's their end goal, that they're thinking, let's look at 10, 20, 30 years down the line. I don't think they can even do that.
I don't think they can look at 10 or 10 days down the line, to be honest with you. Carl, that's a fair point. Yeah. Are the Irish government that clever that they're thinking, you know, to the next generation 20 years ahead or 30 years ahead at the next generation of people?
I don't think the Irish government are very good necessarily even looking 2 months ahead sometimes, given some of the decisions that they make. But that doesn't deny the evidence from elsewhere being factually correct. So they're not connected thoughts. That's simply a critique on one hand, but looking past the actual known evidence on the other. And in a case like that, you should doubt the Irish government. So don't go with what they say or what they think. Go with the evidence. The evidence shows that people in the second generation, first generation kind of native-born after people immigrate to a country, they are successful. The Irish showed that when they went to other countries, you know. You've seen that with say Mexican people in California. I saw that all the time. So you got to trust a few things. One is there is evidence for this, and so it's not as if it's a completely unknown situation. Two is that acknowledging we have a broken machine and fixing it is in everybody's interest, including for the people who come here, so that the ones that should be here are treated fairly and, you know, welcome in, and that the ones who shouldn't are kicked out, and that will get rid of a lot of the kind of anti-immigrant concerns.
We seem to be allergic to kicking people out of this country for some reason.
That's because this country is run on emotions. Like, no one here...
You know, it's not emotions, it's the law. Barristers and solicitors, you know, being paid huge money down in court number 36 or wherever it is down there in Smithfield. They're making a fortune keeping them here.
The law is driven by politicians who are driven by the emotions of the electorate, because this country judges most things based on emotion. And so they don't actually look at the factual outcome of it. They look at how it makes them feel. That's why something like hate speech can become, you know, potentially become a law, because people say, yeah, hate is wrong. I feel bad if someone is hated. And so that should be a crime. They don't actually think through the empirical evidence. That's what I'm trying to say. And in Ireland, there's a real, like, oh, but you're kicking your man out. That's awful. There was a case a few years ago about some kid.
Chinese kids,
was potentially being sent off, and everyone was up in arms about it. Of course, the government caved, break the rules, bend the rules, typical Irish way. You know, rule's not a rule because you can always change it. That's what those rules are for.
Yeah, that was a Chinese kid whose mother had entered the country illegally, and because he'd been living here for 5 years and integrated into the school, it was all, oh, you can't send him back to China. He's never lived in China in his life.
But that's the whole point, is it's those hard cases, that's why you hold the line. Because you say, yeah, even in those cases, if you break the law, this is what happens. We don't have laws that... Actually, you killed someone, but that was 7 years ago. We should forgive them. It's not.
I remember at the time of that particular incident saying this is not the government's fault. This is the mother's fault for entering the country illegally. The mother is to blame. Oh, sorry, Jackie, you want to say something to Carol there? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just when Carol was saying there that our elected representatives are really voicing the opinions of the people, I actually don't think they are. From what I see, they're turning their backs on the people and what people are saying. And we saw that with the referendum in a major way, like that they went against what the people were saying. And with the immigration thing, they're not listening to what people are saying at all. I don't see that. I see a completely
I think Jackie is right, Carl. What the government, you're saying they're listening to the emotions of the people. No, they're listening to the emotions of a few lefties, People Before Profit, and the NGOs.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
That's who they're listening
but you have to look at who are the loud voices. So
Paul Murphy's a loud voice, Breed Smith's a loud voice, Aon O'Riordan's a loud voice.
Yeah, and the vast majority of regular people are too caught up living their normal life to really get vocal about this. But there are a group of highly motivated, well-paid people, normally quite often vassals of the state, who effectively pay them to tell them back over megaphones what they want to hear. And there's basically a dynamic there, a feedback loop, where you would be told that, like, the most pressing issue in people's lives is, you know, LGBTQ or anti-immigration. It's not. It's health. Yeah. It's education. It's the stuff that having a job. And, you know, and it expresses itself in other areas. And so they'll shout you down, get you to not believe the evidence you hear with your own ears, see with your own eyes. But that feedback loop is not being driven by Jack. It's not being driven by me. It's being driven, you know, by a highly paid NGO sector who are going to, you know, like, they all come from the same places. They all go to the same schools. They all believe the same shit. But Paul Murphy's a Black Rock kid. So is Owen O'Brien. Like, that's what you're up against.
Yeah. Sorry, Jackie, just quickly. I want to go to Bernie and Sophia. Go on. Sorry, Jackie, go ahead. What did you want to say there just before I go to Bernie?
What I was going to say is, you know, you have these loud voices, but it's these voices that are being allowed to be heard by your mainstream media. Mm. And that whereas the likes of be it Niall and other people like Matty McGrath and Carol Nolan, those voices are not being put into the mainstream media. So it's completely unfair. So the likes of Aidan and some of these guys who are very well-off guys living in very wealthy areas, they're the ones who are getting, and the people before profit, they're getting the media, and they're getting mainstream media. So their points are being put across.
Yeah, so Paul Murphy's never off Virgin Media. Stay there for a second. Let me just... I think he lives around the corner, actually, from Ballymount. That's probably why he's close enough there, just to drop in and be on the panel every now and again. Bernie, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Niall. How are you?
Good. You've been listening to what Carl Dieter is saying there, that he kind of agrees to some degree there should be a pathway in the middle for, you know, you've got the ordinary visa system, you've got the asylum system, and for those, which seem to be the majority, economic migrants, that there should be some sort of legal pathway to stay in Ireland or to come to Ireland.
To the ports, to tell them straight back out, put them on a boat and send them back. I'm sorry, Niall, I have worked so hard. I'm telling you today, I got an ESB bill, which has been covered by the government's credits for the last few months, like everybody else's, and it was €74. Yesterday morning, this morning at 7 a.m., I got a bill for €224. How is nobody listening to me? Where am I supposed to pull that out of my arse?
Oh, the government would say that's a separate issue. They'll tell you that's a separate issue. Nothing to do with them.
Okay. So I was horrified. A friend of mine this morning, her daughter got she's on unpaid leave from maternity leave, and her husband worked all the way through COVID, and he was essential services. And he is, after getting a tax bill for €1,700, going back to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
They are on. He's unemployed. They're barely pulling. They're barely existing because they want to give the best to their children starting out.
Well, mind you, can I just point out on a separate, I was one of the ones who said the tax bills, you know, for people during COVID and the warehousing, et cetera, should have all just been wavered. It should have been done away with, because the idea that you would now hand people bills 4 years later, particularly those in business, you know, massive amounts of money that they couldn't afford during COVID and they certainly can't afford now, is just ridiculous to put them out of business because of it.
Man is demanding money, like absorbent, like.
Well, you can make it. No, well, you can make an arrangement to pay it over a period of time.
It's immaterial. They paid the tax. I never asked them. I mean, I was going around this morning, hysterical. I rang the electricity and they said, oh, have you got something left on? It's like the dark here. I'm barely turning on the lights. I have all the latest bulbs. I'm telling you, I'm living in this country and I've paid my way. And yet you expect me to be open-armed and welcoming to people who are here taking the tax office, and we're paying more tax. Like, tell me, where is the logic of that, Niall?
See, Carol, this is the problem we have in this country. When, say, somebody like Bernie sees, you know, a family, say, from the Ukraine, come to Ireland and be handed a modular home, given 800 quid, for example, if they want to stay in somebody's home, you know, the rental payment that they give out or whatever it is, and be given stuff. And, you know, and she can't make ends meet. And she's been living here all her life, working as a nurse, paying tax. You know, it's a very hard pill for the Irish to swallow, isn't it?
And I'm just one person.
Again, like,
Yeah, sorry, Carl, go ahead.
Yeah. So look, I'd be saying, like, if you look at Bernie's situation, okay, like her electricity bill is not connected to anything.
No, I know. But the government just spent $4 billion last year on
spectrum of things.
No, Carl, you're missing the point. The government just spent $4 billion last year on welfare migrants, essentially. Because that's what they are. So the government spent $4 billion of our tax money. You know, I would rather be giving Bernie a few quid towards her electricity bill and helping her out, because she's worked all her life in this country.
Yeah, I'd rather sack half the HSE and pay people for their electricity.
Yeah, I know. But you understand why this pisses Irish people off.
You can't just pick and choose.
Okay, sorry, one at a time. Sorry, Bernie, hang on for a second. Let Carl respond to that. Carl, go ahead.
I was just saying, you can't pick and choose the things that you want to cut in order to get benefits for yourself. So Bernie says, look, why don't we cut, you know, people coming into the country fleeing a war, and instead I get money for my electricity bill. I have a high electricity bill too, but I want it paid by sacking half the HSE and half of the civil service. So there's my choice. And why won't mine be listened to?
Because there's a bit of a difference, isn't there? Whatever about sacking half a HSE, I don't disagree with you.
Similar amounts of money involved.
Yeah, I know, but at least they're working on the paying tax. They might not be doing anything.
Massive inefficiencies.
Yeah, but hold on, there is massive.
But at least
they're Irish people, generally speaking, and they're working on the paying tax.
There's a factual element here that if you work in the HSE, you're paying tax. You're paid from tax. So all you're doing is reducing your take home pay. Civil servants actually probably shouldn't pay any income tax. They're paid from tax. So it's really just, it's like this notional idea that, oh, I'm paying tax. You're not. Your money comes from tax. Everything else pays tax. You don't really pay tax. You get a reduction in your take-home pay that came from tax. So I want
to... But that's not the way people look at it. Bernie was a nurse all her life. Yeah. She paid tax.
I'm not concerned with how they look at it. Some people look at things...
Okay, yeah, but Carl, you're still missing the point I'm making. You know, we're all for helping people who are coming from a war. We're all for helping people, you know, in other ways. But you just can't have a free-for-all situation that's costing the taxpayer and the exchequer of this country roughly $4 billion in the last year, you know, in accommodation and money and tents and all sorts.
Did you not listen to anything I said so far?
No, I have. What I'm saying is you're not understanding why Bernie's annoyed.
No, I'm not saying it's a free-for-all. No, I do understand. I just don't agree with her solution.
Well, her solution is that you help people who are coming from a war, but everybody else, you put them on a boat and send them home. That's her solution. And avoid paying out all that kind of money, so there'll be more money for her.
Okay, no more money for to improve the services in the country.
So the services in the country are run our ways anyway. You can throw all the money in the world at the HSE and it'll still be a mess. So, and we've proven that every year. The HSE never comes in on budget. And by the way, I'm talking about the collective HSE, not you. So let's just be really clear. The HSE is a disaster. Ireland has some of the highest cancer rates in the world. We have very broken services. You go into an emergency room anywhere in Europe, you're seen in an hour. In Ireland, you're lucky to be seen the same day. And it doesn't matter what you have to triage with. So, like, let's not talk about the HSE anything because it's such a disaster. What I would be saying, though, is it's not as if you have to trade one off for the other. That's a false choice. You can actually have both. And what I've said so far is we should have a rational, quick expulsion process, but also make a path for people to come here if their only skill is that I can carry bricks somewhere. Because, you know, we need those people too. And the ones that we produce in Ireland usually tend to be non-productive, and they're not looking to go out and do these jobs. They'd rather sit in their house.
Is it fair to say that there is a market there for, you know, labourers, unskilled workers, or whatever it is, you know, in Ireland, be it picking fruit, working in hotels, in the back room as porters, you know, whatever it happens to be, unskilled workers who are never, ever going to, you know, earn a huge amount of money, but they will take up the jobs that, of course, many of the Irish just won't do.
But Niall, we put such a stamp on all our own, like every summer we all worked in the summer. Mm-hmm. Seasonal work. I know of 17 or 18 year olds that break a gut to try and get a job somewhere at the moment.
Yeah, I know 17 and 18 year olds would rather sit in their PlayStation but as well too.
Yeah, but I know there's an awful lot of them out there. I know for a fact around here there's kids where every day, do you know of anyone who has a job? Everybody every day has been asked that for the last 3 weeks around here. Older people, do you want me to cut your grass? Like, there's so many people. Why aren't they allowed to have seasonal work? Like, why are we in a situation where people are waiting 5 years? I mean, we're pouring 40 billion into people who are going to waste, never going to do anything for the country, only take the money off us. Why are we giving them money when they come to the door here and attend and welcome in?
Sorry, Carl.
That's the bit that's fake. I said to you earlier. No, that's fake. If we acknowledge that there's a lot of people who need to be sent back to wherever they came from, and I accept that and I'm agreeing with you, so we agree on that. But you can't assume that everyone who comes to this country, whether they're fleeing a war or just coming for a better life, is basically some brain donor with no skills other than maybe being able to stack shelves. There are engineers, there are builders, there are like master carpenters and printers and nurses and doctors and physicists and every manner of everything. So like that has to be acknowledged. Now you can turn around and say, well, how do we know that their qualifications from Sierra Leone are real? Look, maybe that's not an easy fix or an easy thing to know. But it's not as if everyone who comes into a country seeking a better life, which is your economic migrant, is, you know, some talentless loaf who's just going to be a sponge off the nation. If you actually look at immigration in this country, and I am an immigrant myself, as a group, they pay twice as much in tax traditionally up until last year as they took in any form of payments. Okay. And again, speaking of myself, as an immigrant, I've created 30 jobs in this country. I have 30 mouths to feed. That's not something that
you didn't just come here for a better life, you know, illegally. You came here to a visa program.
I came here because my parents moved here. Well, like that's, yeah. You know, that I didn't come here for
anything. That's what I'm saying. You came here legally, but you came to Ireland legally.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is my arrival being legal, illegal, that has nothing to do with it. It's the outcome that I'm talking about. And what I am saying is the input path, the way that you get here, yes, there are people coming illegally. That should be discouraged by quick ejection.
Okay, well, hang on a second, because, sorry, Bernie, I need to get to a lot of people. Carla, because I know I can't keep you too long, Carla, but I want to go to Sophia as well. Sophia, sorry for keeping you so long. Go ahead, Sophia.
That's all, man. No problem. The reason we have so many immigrants and foreign nationals working in our hospitals is because they will take less pay than the nurses and doctors that are trained here who are Irish. So they have to go abroad to get work that pays them for all the 7 years of study that they've done in this country. So it's not as simple and black and white as Carl is making it out.
Mm. Yeah, I did hear that because a lot of them work through agencies, of course, and they get paid less money than some of the Irish doctors and nurses. I'm well aware of that.
That's the reason. And then they have a career in the HSE.
They're working for agencies, Carl.
I work in the HSE. I know exactly. It's the biggest employer in the country, 100,000 people.
Yeah, that's why I think it's a giant like waste of money given the results that we get. But what I'd be saying in that case is, if people are able to provide the same level of care for lower pay, well, then it really says that maybe all the people working in the union should be paid less too.
The reason, Carl, that many people come here and get paid less than somebody who's, say, working in a currently in a hospital, you know, who entered the Irish system, for example, is that they're working through an agency. So the agencies pay them less.
Okay, great. Well, then fire all the HSE. Like I said, fire half of them. They can all go work for agencies as well.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
Okay, can I get back to the original question?
I'm going
to
help out the farming.
Okay, let's take the focus off the HSE just for the moment and let me get back to the original question. Sophia, in relation to what Kitty Holland says in the Irish Times when she spoke to NGOs, and the NGOs, by their own admission, admitted that the majority of people coming here, the vast majority, are economic migrants. And there is no pathway or legal pathway for them to stay in Ireland, although nobody seems to get deported from this country anyway. But in saying that, should there be a legal pathway, Sophia?
There definitely should. They should be put through the same system that's in the US and in Australia, done background checks, being able to support themselves when they come over. The NGOs, to be quite honest to you, they're just quangos renamed and rebranded. Oh, yeah. There's 33,000 NGOs in this country. They make legislative decisions without having any mandate. The government take all their advice from these people. They pay them huge amounts of money to give them these reports, and it's always some sort of report that calls millions, and it could be just done properly if they actually legislated properly in government. NGOs are not given a mandate by the people, and they make all these changes to the Irish Constitution and the legislation.
Well, they propose
as well.
These changes,
so,
yeah.
I don't know. But they do listen to them, and there's so many of them. There's a huge amount of money wasted on NGOs. Mm. And they were only quangos going back 20 years.
Well, I know. By the way, can I point out, you know, when we talk about NGOs, there are a lot of good NGOs, but there are a lot of bad ones too. And we spend $7 billion a year, roughly, on NGOs.
They're the three best ones.
The three best NGOs?
Well, I would have...
Certainly not the Women's Council of Ireland, that's for sure.
I think
Women's Aid is an excellent...
I'm sorry, we seem to have a little bit of a delay between the two of you there. Carl, you were saying, Carl, name the three best NGOs. I can't off the top of my head.
But there's like, if you said to me, name three great companies or three great stocks or three great areas to buy a home in, like, why does everyone always say that? Oh, some of them are excellent. Who's excellent? Name them.
Yeah, but there are smaller NGOs, for example, that look after helping the homeless, or they look after, say, I don't know, the elderly, or they look after local, you know, youth clubs and stuff like that. There are smaller NGOs as well.
Just name them.
I don't know the names at the top of my head, Carol.
Well, Peter McFerry said that the government should make 8,000 modular homes immediately. And they didn't listen to him. And he's on the cold face of that problem. And he's dealing with this stuff every day of the week. And I hugely admire him.
I know Peter McFerry. Wonderful character, very smart man. And I've worked with him.
But Sophia, do you believe that people should be deported? When we look at, say, and I give you the example again in May, so 3,000 people, roughly 2,000 are economic migrants, 1,000 maybe genuine asylum seekers. The 2,000 that are economic migrants, should they be deported? Should they all be deported? Or should there be a pathway for them to stay?
100%. We have not. What did we do to deserve this burden? Our whole system is overcrowded. We've got housing problems. The A&E is overcrowded. Hospitals, schools, doctors and creches, police, teachers and doctors. And all the government has done is push the responsibility to the people on the cold face to actually deal with all the issues and the people who live in the areas where all these migrants are just being shipped into. And so you deal with it. We're going to make a decision, but you guys have to figure out how we actually have to deal with it. And the police are on the front line dealing with it every night of the week. And there is an increase in violence, and there is an increase in a lot of things like drug dealing. You only have to look at the news, and some of the migrants are getting into trouble. You know, the biggest drugs haul, I think they had up in Donegal, they were all migrants. They were not Irish people.
Sorry, Carl, go ahead.
Sorry, I wasn't saying anything. I was just listening there.
Okay, hang on for a second. Thank you for that, Sophia. I want to go to Morris, and I want to come to Malachy as well in a second. Morris, hi, how are you?
Niall, how are you doing? I just want to say a big thank you to over the 50,000 people in Dublin who voted for you and gave you their number one preference vote. And they get the government a message. We're making a protest that we haven't gone away. So roll on to the next campaign, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Niall. All right. Was that all you want to say? Okay. All right. Let me. Thanks for that, man. Okay. Malaghy, you there?
Good afternoon, Niall. Let me be counsellor to you.
Yeah, sorry. Let me reintroduce you. Councillor Malaghy Steenson, are you there?
I am, Mr. Boyle. That's the first time I've been addressed as such on radio since those tumultuous events of a couple of weeks ago.
Well, Councillor Steenson, do you agree with Kitty Holland and what she says, that there should be a pathway for that, I don't know, 60 to 80% of people who are coming here to our borders who are economic migrants? She believes there should be a pathway. Carl Dieter agrees, because basically what he's saying is, although some of those may be a burden on the state right now, the next generation, similar to Mexicans in California, you know, they may be doctors, lawyers, and they may be productive members of society.
You can't paraphrase me as me. You can't phrase me as agreeing with Kitty Holland.
No, I'm not saying you agree with her. I'm not saying you agree. But Malaghy, does he have a point?
And I'd be like Carl on that. The chances of me agreeing with Kitty Holland are about the same chances of me eating me hat. There is a pathway into this country, and it's called the visa system. The other system that's being used by the vast bulk of people who are coming in here is the asylum process, which is totally broke, which is not effective. And, you know, it's amazing, Niall. Everything I have been saying for the past year and a half, since November 2022, when this really kicked off, is now government policy. The Taoiseach is saying everything that we have done. Now, that's just to get him over the election and over the next election. Piers Doherty's speech in the Dáil yesterday could have been written by me. You know, there's a non-acceptance of reality in this country that ordinary, decent people have been seeing on the streets for the past number of years. The facts are, we do not have the infrastructure in this country to import the vast amount of people we're importing. And when we talk about we need people to come in and work in the health system, for instance, well, maybe if our own nurses and doctors were able to afford to live here, to buy a house or to even rent a house, they wouldn't have to emigrate. If we weren't increasing the population by the levels that it's increasing, the health system wouldn't have gone from being a very bad health system to being probably the worst health system in the world. And that is across the board with all of anything that not just this government, but the previous government and the previous government before that touches. They are just not capable of running a bath, never mind a country or an economy. We see the nonsense yesterday of McGrath off to be European Commissioner, and Chambers, a guy who you wouldn't send to buy a bottle of milk, is now going to be Minister for Finance, the most important job almost in the country.
And possibly the leader of Fianna Fáil, and possibly a Taoiseach in the future.
Well, God help us if that's what we're facing. But, you know, some of us are putting a different alternative to the people, and the people ultimately will pay the price of the choice that they make.
But you're saying that, Malaghy. No, hang on for a second. You're telling me that the people have a choice. The people had a choice on May the 7th. Yourself and Gavin Pepper got elected. One or two others around the country who would be considered nationalist or centre-right would have got elected. I didn't, unfortunately. Nearly got it, but didn't. We sent the same four type of MEPs back to Europe again, four political parties, Labour, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, back to Europe again to make the same bad decisions they've been making for the last 5 years. So the people had a choice. But as I said in RTE, it's almost like they have Stockholm Syndrome. They just keep voting for them again.
And to some extent, that is true. But there were breakthroughs. Now,
they were small. I mean, they were small, Malaghy.
At least you got onto RTE, which was more. But, you know, the biggest tree in the garden is an oak tree. It grows from an acorn. You know, we knew we would have an upward battle. We don't see this as a one election cycle. We will have another election now in September or October. And, you know, the increased wisdom is now September rather than October. So the people will have another opportunity. But I think by that time, you see, if you look at what happened in the weeks before the election, we got rid of Varadkar because he was told in Europe that he would have no European seats. He had no party effectively if he didn't go and put somebody else in to make the noises is now Taoiseach, and was saying all of the things that we are saying. Who would have ever thought when they were slagging off Donald Trump about putting a wall on the American border that we would be putting a wall effectively along the canal? You know, yeah, and people would...
Well, and Waterways Ireland have said they want to now look at something more permanent to stop people putting tents up along the canal. And I just, that just blows my mind.
What they can do is they can just say, if you put a tent on the canal, you're going to be on the front of the queue for deportation.
That's exactly what I said on Twitter. You should be prosecuted and jailed because that's against the law. The idea that Waterways Ireland are going to leave those barriers there. They're going to leave the barriers there, I believe, till at least August, till the end of the summer. So we've got tourists coming in looking at these barriers on a beautiful canal, right? All because we're afraid people will pitch tents. Rather than saying, if you pitch a tent there, we're going to put you in jail or we're going to deport you from the country. So Waterways Ireland are looking at an infrastructure or a plan for the future to stop people pitching tents. What are we going to do? Put bollards all along the pathway or, I don't know, set traps for them? Or I don't know, it's stupid.
You're going to cover the whole city in it. Just look at the cynical approach to this by the NGOs who are getting funded to buy tents to give to these people.
They should be jailed as well. They should be fined. They should be fined and jailed as well.
Well, they're not being fined. They won't be fined. They're being given the money to actually
as
a supplement.
I know.
To their, right? Now, the all they do,
Name three good NGOs.
Carl. I'll come to that now in a sec. They put them on the Grand Canal. They didn't put them on the Royal Canal because they'd have been left there. They put them outside on Merrion Square because they knew the state would move them very quickly. This is very cynical. And to come to Carl's point about any good NGOs, let's look at what the NGOs are. We spend 6.85 billion on them every year on 33,000, I think, is. It's probably the number's gone up since last week because they just seem to come out of nowhere. Now, look at what are some of the NGOs, and people will say, oh, look at the good ones, and then they talk about homelessness. We have a homeless industry built around NGOs. If all of the money that was spent on the NGOs was actually spent on building houses, we mightn't have a problem. If you look at, for instance, NGOs that are set up to look after children, maybe with special needs or something. That's something we pay tax for. That's something that we pay one of the highest VAT rates in the world on. And when we're told that we're a low-tax economy, that is nonsense. Every time you go and buy a litre of petrol or a bar of chocolate, you're being fleeced in this country. And what we have is, if people of goodwill go out and fundraise to buy a machine for Temple Street Hospital, for instance, why do we do that? That's the state, again, taking advantage of our good nature. And people should be standing up and saying, we are not fundraising. We are paying you to do this. You're taking our money and you're pilfering it away. And when you see what will come in this budget, because it will be an election budget, to try and buy their way back into power with our money
and
destroying the country.
Well, we know what's going to happen to this budget. You know, they'll increase social welfare. They'll increase the pensions. They'll increase the single parent payment, and they do all that just to buy a few votes. Hang on, Malachy and Karen, if you can for a second, because I want to bring in Eddie in. He's been waiting ages. Sorry, hang on, Councillor Steenson. Eddie, hi, how are you?
Niall, how's it going? Sorry, speaker, there was listening. Listen, my couple of just points I want to say. What's his name there, the first guy he had on? Terrible names.
Carl Dieter, yeah.
Carl, my name. Carl's going to fall over if he keeps on leaning left. Just the point he was saying about bringing, like, the, not all of them are bad, or how to get the word, like, they have qualifications and all that, right? If a lot of them have qualifications and are coming in, they shouldn't be coming in the illegal route. They already exist, as Malachy said, the visa one. And so technically what they're trying to do is jump the queue. And rather than spending 15 grand on getting themselves here illegally, apply for it, come here with 15 grand, set yourself up properly. So they shouldn't be, if you have qualifications, you shouldn't be coming in here illegally, hiding your documentation. You know what I mean? It doesn't
But Carl did say that. That's not what he's suggesting. He's saying that if you have no skills, that there should be a new visa system or a new pathway saying, listen, I want to come to Ireland for a better life. I don't have any skills, but look, I'll work hard.
Yeah, well, there, that's your lottery. That's the one point I would agree. That's what we should bring in for them kind of people, is the lottery. We shouldn't be taking people in who come here illegally as migrants. We haven't got the money. We haven't got the infrastructure. We cannot take them. We are full. Okay, and so, that's not racist. That's not, that's
No, it's not racist. And I don't disagree with you. I think if you really want to go down that route, and if I want to agree with Carl, a lottery system is probably the way to go, where you would allot, say, 1,000 places or 2,000 places per year, and you can apply for them just like you do in America or Canada or wherever else, and they randomly pick them.
Bear with me, Niall, earlier on he was saying, this is my understanding now, if I misunderstood him or wrong, but he was saying that people, if I remember correctly, I'm paraphrasing now, he said something along the lines that people keep saying that they're all... they have no qualifications or not. And he said, no, he said, and where we're speaking specifically at that time, I thought about people coming in here illegally and who we should be allowing in. Because we weren't talking about people coming in by the visa system. We were talking about, and he turned around and said, that not all them people have qualifications. And that's why I'm saying, well, then if not all them people have qualifications, then people who are coming in legally with qualifications shouldn't be coming in illegally with qualifications. Come in the way everyone else is. Queue up, get into the queue, and try and get a job and come in properly. Do you know what I mean? And don't be coming in illegally. If you have 15 grand to pay someone to get you here illegally, why don't you actually apply for a visa and come in here with that 15 grand and put it towards the country and not some criminal enterprise who's shipping people across and risking their lives?
You know, no, that's a fair point. And I think Carl may agree with you. I mean, Carl, somebody who's coming here as a doctor, say, for example, illegally and living in a tent in Grand Canal Quay or whatever it is, I mean, under your system, they should be able to apply as a skilled worker to come here.
There's two things. One is, I totally agree with disempowering the human traffickers who drive the human migration machine, because they're the same people who were the drug cartels. That's evident, well evident, throughout Central and South America and Mexico. They're complete scumbags. The fact that they're moving human lives instead of drugs is just, that's the only difference. But they're the same people. Second is that when I say that they have skills, you could be, for instance, a concrete engineer, and there is no concrete engineer visa. So when you say, oh, get into the skills visa, that's not actually the way it works. You usually have to find a sponsor company, and you can't really do that while you're writing from abroad. But once you're here and you show up somewhere and you say, look, I'm a concrete engineer, and they start talking to you and they say, oh, yeah, I know, you know the difference between 35 Newton concrete and 50, and you've done this, this, and this. They quickly realize that, yeah, this guy is legit, but you would never be able to do that with the existing system. So having something like a lottery to allow a certain amount of people in who may have very low skill or a certain set of skills that maybe aren't like high on our priorities to where you'd go in the way a doctor would, that's an important thing. Like we actually, there's loads of skill shortages in Ireland. And like, you want the roads, you want the service, you want to be able to go into a shop and see that things are for sale, there's people working there. Like, if you want that stuff, then you also want this. It's just a question of how much.
Okay. Well, Councillor Malachy Seaton, well, hang on. Is that a fair point? Malachy, would you agree with, for those extra 70% of economic migrants, that there should be a system or a type of lottery system? And now, obviously, we have to fix our laws first and fix the way we enforce our laws in immigration. But going forward, for those who would be considered to be unskilled workers, similar to the way, for example, people would go to America as unskilled workers under the lottery system, should we have a lottery system?
Well, I think at some point down in the future we should. But the position we have now is that people are coming into the country, and the country simply doesn't have the capacity to absorb them. Whether they're coming in as migrants, even through a visa process now, or coming in to abuse the asylum system, the simple reality is we don't have enough housing stock for a start. And what that does, simple supply and demand economics, drives the price up for ordinary people. I mean, if you look at what Dublin City Council now describes as an affordable house, it's 450,000, I think. Like, that's almost €500,000. You could go to Spain and buy 5 apartments for that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something fundamentally wrong in the property market here. And every initiative that the government takes just drives up the price, because they're not prepared as we were in the 40s, 50s and 60s. As I keep saying, when we were supposed to be poor and stupid and uneducated, we were able to build Finglas, Ballymun, Cabra, all of them housing estates right across this country. And now we can't even build one house. If you look at the amount of houses that are built by the local councils directly around this country, you're not even into the hundreds. All they're doing now is going out and buying houses in private estates, or buying, in fact, houses back that the council sold to the previous tenant and buying that back at market value. Or they're buying second-hand houses in normal estates. And what that does, it drives up the price on ordinary people, because the state and the councils have limitless pockets of taxpayers' money and they can pay a premium. And that's not fair on our young people who are growing up, or anybody, for instance, who has a house whose family have fled the nest, if they can get rid of them, which seems to be impossible now, that they want to trade down, or a family in a small house whose kids are starting to grow and they need a bigger house. They can't trade up because the whole system doesn't work.
No, the whole system. No, I agree. The whole system is completely broken and we need a complete change. We need a change of government. Mind you, while I was running for election, I was looking on Boyle Sports at the betting that was going on at the time for the European MEPs. But I happened to notice the betting for the next general election on Boyle Sports. And third down was a Labour, Sinn Féin, Social Democrat, People Before Profit government. And I said, my God, could you imagine? I think I'd just best leave the country.
Well, that's the alliance you have in the City Council of Dublin, with the exception of Labour. I mean, and these are the people. People Before Profit put out a statement there, part of it which condemns me, but goes on to say that they want to set up a militant anti-racist movement. Wow. I thought we'd done away with armed wings in this country, or military wings.
Okay, well, hang on a second. Let me go to Peter Dooley from the Dublin Renters Union. Peter,
they're going to do that.
Oh, okay, hang on, Malik, give a second. Peter Dooley, hi, how are you?
Niall, how's it going? How are you?
And by the way, commiserations that you didn't get elected. Sorry to hear that. By the way, you're a good man. I thought you would have. The local council.
Ah, no, thanks very much. No, thanks to yourself as well. No, you got a good chance to have a chat with you as well. No, but thanks to everybody who came out and voted for me as well. Like, so I'm sure I didn't get a chance to thank everybody personally, but whatever. But keep fighting on, Noel, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Peter, getting back to what we're talking about. So the original kind of story was based on what Kitty Holland said, and this was in Gripped Media there. They kind of reported on it in her podcast that she was suggesting that, you know, there should be a legal route or legal pathway for the economic migrants that are currently in tents or accommodation across the country. Should there be?
No, I thought we had a system there at the moment, and obviously the system isn't fit for purpose, as we all know. Like, do you know what? I just have to be frank about all this. Dublin is becoming an absolute disaster. Like, you know what I mean? Look at the fences along the Grand Canal. Look at the chaos that's being created by this government in terms of destroying society. And who have they benefited? They benefited, again, the rich, who they ultimately represent. Ireland's a low-wage economy, and nobody's making this argument with the immigration debate. It is a low-wage economy. One in five workers are on low pay. Last week, there was a big demonstration. So there were 15,000 workers under the age of 18 that were on less than the minimum wage. IBEC have been lobbying for no increases to the minimum wage of €12.70. Central Bank are looking for 50,000 extra workers. We're all about low pay, unregulated work, gig economy, deregulating workers' conditions. And what's the best way to do that? Import cheap labour and export all the highly educated, highly trained young generation we have in Ireland. Nurses, doctors, teachers are all leaving the country in their droves because they can't afford to live in Dublin, can't afford to live in Ireland. Like, Ireland is going down the Swanee the way it's going at the moment in Dublin. And it's sad to see with everything going down this way, like in terms of the huge amount of inequalities going on. I've seen it in most people I've been talking to, like even on the doors over the last few months, meeting people. And the people who are really left behind because of these policies and the government, again, have been laying down to the big bosses again with the immigration chaos that they've created and who benefits, putting pressure on already under pressure resources, under pressure the health service, all these issues as well, and more people in poverty. And don't forget, last week a report came out. Nobody talked about it. We're the second most expensive country in Europe in terms of prices, 42% above the European average. Look at the bills. Look at the cost of living, the energy bills. Look at food prices now through the roof for people, forcing people into over the edge. People are, all during the winter, I'm meeting more people and know people who spend their days sitting in shopping centres or libraries to stay warm because they can't afford to keep the heating on.
It's the most expensive country in Europe, by the way. Actually, I think it's the most expensive country in the world for energy now, for electricity and gas. It's also one of the most expensive country in Europe for fuel, for diesel and petrol.
But Noel, also, right?
You blame the Green Party for that, by the way. You blame the Greens for that, by the way.
Well, no, the Green Party. listen, don't get me started on them. The most anti-working class party ever created, I think, the Green Party. But unfortunately, the area I was running, they topped the poll. So that tells you something about the area.
The one takeout I got from running for election for 8 weeks, and the one good thing and the success out of me doing that was I kept Ciarán Cough out of Europe. So I'm quite happy with that success.
Well, fair play.
But you are right, Malachy. Let Aaron Reardon go.
I've been a couple of parties myself, even with scarce resources as well. So I was quite proud of that as well. So it's you know, they've all the money behind them and all the big money machine, the PR and the propaganda and all the rest of it. Like, you know. And you know, all the they get all their media outlets as well, who they can easily pontificate on because they don't rock the boat.
Okay, but look, I did talk about the Greens, and not just the Greens in Ireland, but the Greens worldwide, by the way, that have created this mess when it comes to energy bills, when it comes to the price of diesel and fossil fuels. And not only that as well, of course, their policies disproportionately affect the poorer society. It doesn't affect Mick and Dawkey because he can well afford it, but it does affect Mary and Crumlin. But I've got to make it very quick because I have loads of people to get to. But Peter, getting back to the original question was...
Both for a bit better off people.
Sorry?
The people who vote for him are better off people.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's not working class people that vote for the Green Party.
Oh no, it's Clontarf and Dunleary. So realistically, getting back to the other question was, you know, those people who are coming here, out of the 3,000 that came in May, let's say, for example, you know, the 2,000 who are economic migrants, what happens? Do we make a pathway for some of them to stay here, or do you just deport them all?
No, there has to be a system, a proper visa system. When people are applying to go into any country, if we go to the United States, how do we get in?
Well, then you've just answered the question. The ones that came here without the visa and came here illegally because they don't qualify as asylum seekers, you're saying deport them.
Well, today we're having a debate in the Dáil, right? This is a fast tracking of this EU migration pact, which is a huge erosion of our sovereignty in terms of having a say over a policy of state. Like Article 6 of the Constitution states that the policy of the state should derive from the people of the state. Like, you know, what's generally happened now is that they're bowing down to what they've been told in Brussels, and they're going to say, we're going to take in whatever we're going to take for the next number of years, and to hell with the whatever systems are in place, and we're going to blame Brussels and all this sort of stuff.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know why they want the EU migration pact, because they don't want to take the blame for the next 5 years, well, actually indefinitely, on how many people are coming into Ireland. They could just hold their hands up and say, we have obligations, there's nothing we can do. Stay there. Well, stay there because I got to get to loads of people. Stay there, Councillor Steenson. Do you like that, Councillor Steenson? Jessica, hi, how are you?
That's a certain ring to it.
It just has.
Hiya.
How you doing, Jessica? Say hello to Councillor Steenson. No, I'm only joking. Jessica, what should happen to those economic migrants?
Look, I've said this to you before now. I've no problem people coming here wanting to better themselves. Anyone would want to better themselves if they're coming from, for lack of a better word, a shithole. But you need to do it the right way. If you're coming in and you're taking other routes rather than the actual proper route, then you should be deported. You should be told to fuck off. Like, they're just trancing around, going through other ways.
Mm. I heard one of the NGOs this morning, I think it was on radio, whenever, talking about, but sure, didn't the Irish do it for, this old art trope that they throw out, didn't the Irish do it for years when we went to America and Australia and Canada and all these places?
The NGOs say more than the prayers. I wouldn't listen to them. But look at Australia and New Zealand. They protect their borders with their life. If you don't have the right stuff, if you don't jump through their hoops, you're not getting in. And I don't see why we can't be like that. I don't see why we can't have so many hoops for you to jump through before you can be let in. Like, it's about time.
So you think we just need to get tough?
Yeah, sure. Yes, they're on, like, God, why don't they support people? Because they're too soft. Everyone in that Dáil is too soft. They don't want to do anything. They'd rather just sit around all day pointing fingers and be like, oh, well, this is the problem. This is what we should be focusing on. And they'd rather listen to everyone else except the people who are saying, you're doing your jobs wrong.
But see, the NGOs would call us, all of us on the air today, a bunch of bloody racists. That's what they'd say. You know, we're all fascists.
They're doing that for years now. Yeah.
I'd call them a bunch of do-gooding pandies. That's what I'd call them.
Say no.
Can I give you an answer for the NGOs?
Yeah, give me an answer for the NGOs, Peter. Go on.
Don't call them NGOs anymore. Call them government organisations, because that's who they're funded by. So we should call them GOs in future. Don't call them NGOs. And the big thing is, there's a couple of points actually missed in this as well, which are important, I think. the whole issue about Ukraine, this war in Ukraine, 107,000 Ukrainians have come to Ireland. Ireland is a neutral country. We should be pushing for peace. Now they're pushing towards World War III with Russia, a confrontation with Russia. Like, they're absolute lunatics. In Ireland in particular, like, you know, they've bent over backwards to Brussels all the time, taking a huge percentage of Ukrainians in without putting the proper infrastructure and resources or integration in place. And yet we're continuing on this war path. They're absolute lunatics. But the other issue on the NGOs, I think, is an important one, is about the homeless. Malachy and I made a point about the homeless industry, which I 100% agree with. You got to ask the question, who benefits from this? Who benefits from continued industries? And if we have so many NGOs trying to help homelessness, why do we have homelessness in the first place? Obviously, they're not doing their job, but that's the case, isn't it?
Well, you know as well as I do, the NGOs get paid per person if they get them a bed for the night. The NGOs have CEOs who are on very high salaries. So it is an industry. It's a huge industry, homelessness.
It is, but that's why it's been infiltrated. Like, the whole thing has been infiltrated to attack working class issues for me, because working class issues are about what's happening is it's the so-called left in Ireland have failed on working class issues. And that's the reality, because I would find myself from being of old school left in terms of what believes in democracy. I wouldn't believe in all the stuff that they're coming out with now, because they've failed in these issues. And they've...
Okay, well, let me just go to Morris as well. Morris, hi, how are you? Hello, Morris, are you there? Oh, I think we've lost Morris for some reason. Oh, I think Morris is gone. He abandoned us. Peter, you know, I find myself in a situation where I've never agreed with Kitty Holland, and I don't agree with her on this occasion either. But I do understand the point that Carol is making, that, you know, when you went to California, as he said years ago, there was a lot of Mexicans in California. And yes, the first generation of Mexicans probably, you know, depended on welfare payments and everything else. But the second generation of Mexicans 20 or 30 years later, none of them got good jobs. You know, they were, you know, CEOs, they were doctors, they were nurses, they were lawyers and solicitors. And maybe that's the plan.
No, I understand that. I understand people want a better existence, a better life. That goes without saying for anybody. Look in Ireland. Look how many people who are struggling in Ireland. But the issues are with immigration. It's this chaos is putting pressure on the resources that are already there. Ireland's a very wealthy country. Like, there's 2 billionaires with the same wealth as the bottom 50% in society. Top 1% has 35 or 36% of the wealth. And as I said earlier, we're the second most expensive country in Europe in terms of prices, 42% above the European average. Force more people over the edge into poverty. They can't exist. And what's happening now is that the extra pressure that it's putting on is making conditions worse for people. And all you have is the righteous virtue signalers saying, yeah, bring more in, keep bringing more in. And if anybody has any questions with it, you're a bigot or whatever, rather than dealing with the real issues, I don't want to see conditions worsen for people. For me, they're bad enough in Ireland.
Okay, stay there. Let me just go to Ed. Ed, hi. Hang on, Peter. Ed, hi, how are you?
How's it going?
Ed, what would you like to say?
Hello? Yeah, I just think the NGOs is going down the same road as the charities. Charities are now as an industry, and the NGOs are becoming an industry as well. And it's not NGOs, because it is government organisations. But we can't be seen as the safe haven of the for the rest of the world either, especially when we don't even have a proper defence force. You know, we need serious infrastructure. We need to upgrade all our infrastructure and our military system. And we can't be seen as a safe haven when can't even protect our skies.
No, well, we don't have a very good military. We have two ships there. We don't even have staff for them because we don't pay people well enough. We don't even have a proper military radar in this country, which is bizarre, considering where we're located at the edge of Europe. You'd imagine we'd have some sort of military radar. So we don't have any of that.
So why can't we give what we give to the NGOs towards a proper military system? And if we were to do that, how many of the people coming over here would get involved in a new military system here?
We have tried to expand the defence forces, but unfortunately we pay buttons, so we can't. Nobody's. I mean, really, would you want to join the army in this country and get the amount of money that they get paid is ridiculously low? Nobody would. But then again, there is an argument that because we're a military neutral country, that we shouldn't really have a very large defence force anyway.
No, but you can only stay neutral while you can protect your borders or your country at least. We're not really doing that. We're just an open safe haven, really, for the rest of the world, as if we were part of the British Empire and we colonized the rest of the world. We didn't, you know. And we need to be safe haven in terms of domestic policies, we're not. We're all open to all these international policies and globalism and all the rest of it, and corporatism and all the rest of it, and we're not really focusing on fixing our domestic problems.
Well, that was our fault for joining the EU, wasn't it? We're now part of something bigger. Unfortunately, I'm having a slight problem with my lines tonight where there's a slight delay, but thank you for that, Ed. Thank you, Peter. Let me just go to Albert as well, finally. Albert, hi. How are you doing?
Hi, Niall. Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, Albert. I'm sorry, there's a slight delay between all of us today for some reason on the lines, and I don't know why, but I'll sort that out later on. In relation to the original topic and the original question, should there be another pathway for economic migrants, unskilled?
Yes, I think there should be. However, I think it should be, there should be quite a low cap on it. So if it's 3,000 or 5,000 a year, and that's it. Well, in regards to taking the migrants in, I think there should be a very big sign at the IPAS centre or even at the docks or at the airports saying, you know, no documentation, no passport, you will be deported immediately. You make any statement on your application that is false, immediate deportation. You're an economic migrant, deportation. If we don't get hard, if we don't come down hard on illegal immigration, we will never stop the flood that's coming in, and it'll just get worse and worse and worse.
So what you're saying is similar to what we talked about earlier on, as well as having a system whereby people can claim asylum, obviously legitimately claim asylum. I'm not talking about the chancers. Yeah. As well as having a proper immigration system whereby people can claim a visa if they're skilled workers, we should also have a system similar to the United States, yeah, whereby once a year we have, say, 2,000 positions for people who would be considered unskilled to apply for a lottery system, provided we do background checks on the individuals to make sure they're not criminals.
Exactly, because these people would never get in on the visa system. So I think it's a case of, well, okay, look, you don't have much skills, or maybe you're just a labourer, you can go into something like that, you can go into catering or something, and it's just giving people a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good. Now, but the other part of it is legal migration. When you look at legal migration, people coming here on visas and then bringing their families with them. So we take in 80 to 100,000 legal migrants, and suddenly then you take the families with them, and now you're up around 800,000.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the infrastructure for all these people? Where is the, you know, we look at the illegals, and illegal is probably small in compared to the legal amount of people coming in here. But like, where's all the housing for them? Where is the schools for them? Where's the hospitals? Where's the doctors? Like, if we start taking in, for every illegal migrant that's coming in, if they're bringing in four or five people with them as their family, this multiplies that out to, from, you know, 100,000 to 500,000.
And what we're also not considering, and people are not talking about as well, Albert, is when we hear a figure of, say, 30,000 people, you know, who claimed, you know, went to the IPAS centre and claimed, you know, international protection, they're just the ones who came to Northern Ireland or came to Dublin Airport or whatever it was, majority coming to Northern Ireland, and went to the IPAS centre. That doesn't count for the amount of people who come in who don't make themselves known to us, who go and sleep on a friend's sofa from Pakistan who he met in England, right? And who might be working in a local garage or whatever on the black economy. So we're not taking into consideration, it's probably double those numbers.
Yes. I mean, look, everyone in the government knows there's some recognition of it, but they just won't do anything about it because they don't want to be called racist. They don't want to be called right wing. They do know there's a problem, but they won't do anything about it. And they're hoping that the EU are going to sort it out for them, which obviously they won't.
They know the EU won't sort it out, but at least what they will do is rub their hands with it once the EU migration pact goes through, which will take another 2 years. But then they'll be able to turn around to the Irish people and say, look, it's not our fault. It's Europe. You know, we can't do anything about it. But we have no control
over
it.
You said this so much, like the NGOs. The NGOs are getting paid so much, and they get paid they're rubbing their hands for every illegal immigrant that's coming in because it's more money for them. Have they ever been audited? Has anyone ever audited one of these places, you know, to see where exactly they're spending the money, what they're paying themselves, what junkets they're going on, how much money they're putting into their pensions? I can guarantee you the CEOs of these NGOs are probably paying themselves a six-figure salary and probably putting six figures into their pensions as well. Paying their staff well, going off on junkets, seriously, it's billions. It's not just millions, it's billions. Like, a billion is 100,000 million. People talk about billions now, like we used to talk about millions years ago. But a billion is 100,000 million. And, you know, it just rolls off somebody's tongue like it's nothing.
Yeah, it's just a number, isn't it? Well, listen, Albert, thank you very much indeed. Appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you to everybody. Sorry there was a slight delay on the line today, which was causing some problems with communications. Let me just play one of these WhatsApp messages for you here. This is Jason, I think.
It's a race to the bottom then. Instead of paying doctors and nurses and teachers, as I've always said to you, what they're worth, I mean, they're the ones we put our lives and trusted in. His solution is, well, they're getting paid too much. So if somebody can come in and do my job cheaper, does that mean that I'm getting too much? I mean, I can barely survive on what I have running my house. It's a race to the bottom line of certain jobs. I mean, they're not all going to end up in the doctors and the solicitors and all them. They're going to be after the low-hanging fruit jobs. Construction, transport, taxis. See how the people of Dublin feel now if they stick out? All these unvetted men, as you like to call them, all end up driving taxis. Public transport. They're the jobs they're going after now. They're not going to go after my job or your job, sorry, or government jobs or that. They're going after my job and people on the building sites. So it's a big race to the bottom. The richer get richer and we get screwed. What a country. Have a great day, Niall.
Thanks for that, Jason. Have a great day, you too. Some of the comments coming in, Mike Savage says no, vehemently no. The NGOs are only saying that because it makes them a lot of money. No, and it belittles the genuine asylum seekers, Jerry. Tina on Facebook says we need to make this country so hard to get into, like Australia, that if they genuinely want to come here and contribute to this country, then they will have to make it their business to have all the correct documentation plus money in entering Ireland. Then they'll only do it to get in. If they don't have and don't comply, there is no entry. Simple as that. Tony says, no, mass deportations needed ASAP. Anthony says, if you're desperate for a better life, then you don't need to lie. By the way, in relation to what was suggested today by Carl Dieter in the lottery system, although the Carl didn't say lottery system, but some people had said that, I kind of agree, but not now, not at this moment in time. It's something we could look at in the future. Somebody says, Niall, why don't you just tell us your position? My position is quite simple, and I've said it all along. Those who are genuine asylum seekers, which are very few, should be accommodated and looked after. I don't agree with massive family reunification, by the way. I think that's stupid. But those who are genuine asylum seekers, because they came here alone without their family, didn't they? You know what I mean? So they didn't care very much about their family when they abandoned them in whatever country it was. Anyway, so yes, I believe they should be supported in whatever way possible. But those who are economic migrants, which are the vast majority of people coming into this country, should be put on a plane or a boat or whatever method possible and moved out of this country. And they should be banned from Ireland to never return again. Because that's what happens in most countries, by the way. When you illegally enter a country, you will get banned from the country that you're not allowed to re-enter it again. Sometimes for a period of time. In Australia, I think it's 5 years. But I believe it should be permanent ban. If you enter a country with no documentation, you're entering a country planning on deceiving the authorities. That's the law. And by the way, you know, when I was an RTE at the time, I was told that I wasn't allowed to use the term illegal immigration. I still used it. And I was ballyragged by everybody, including the presenter on RTE, Cormac, on Drive Time, wouldn't allow me to use the word illegal immigration because they said there was no such thing as illegal immigration in Ireland. Have you ever heard such bollocks in all your life? It's on our statute books. There were 100 people prosecuted by an Garda Síochána for entering the country illegally. Should we just pardon them all now? Because according to RTE and according to the gobshites that we sent to Europe, by the way, as MEPs, there is no such thing as illegal immigration. There you go. They don't believe there's such thing. So when you have a government and you have political parties and you have politicians who believe there is no such thing as illegal immigration and illegal immigration is not a problem, we're doomed. We're absolutely doomed. Because they don't believe protecting our borders is important. Because they're a bunch of morons. But unfortunately, we still voted for them. We voted for the same four, or not the same four, but certainly four from the same political parties, to go back to Europe again. I don't know. It's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? Anybody else, to answer that person's question, anybody else who doesn't fit that criteria, who's an economic migrant, at this point in time, because of the way things are, they need to be deported. In the future, we could look at a system that Carl is suggesting, whereby it may be a lottery system for those who are unskilled, and provided we checked our backgrounds and we know who they are and they apply before they get here to come here, similar to America and other countries around the world. Thank you to everybody who got involved in the show. Don't forget to support the show, please. It's coming towards the end of the month. The bills are going to come in and We're in a bad way this month because I haven't been working in 8 weeks. I only started back working now as on Monday night, as you know. So please try and support the show. Go to our website, nileboylan.com. That's nileboylan.com. You can either donate or you can subscribe. Please do it now if you can. The number, or should I say, the website is nileboylan.com. We shall talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.